Clay, thank you and good morning. Are you good at math? No harm if you're not, in the age of calculators, right? Apply that thinking to reading.
And you might even reach across the table and say, hey, you know, I read this in the paper. Take a look at what that fellow has to say in the article. Can you imagine if the fellow lifted their hands and said, sorry, I can't read that. I'm functionally illiterate. You'd be able to hear a pin drop.
Apply the same scenario to a mathematics problem.
People's eyes glaze over. That's math. I'm no good at math. You know, my mother wasn't good at math. My fudge's genetic. And everybody has a good chuckle.
It's no laughing matter.
Look at how the world's changing. Like what's going on right now with technology on the internet and how that's spilling over into people's business lives. We need to prepare kids for that world.
Darren Kiropatwa is leading a mathematics revolution in Winnipeg and around the world.
If they're coming out of school, out of high school, not prepared to continue their studies and to be competitive when they go on to university, then we're not doing them a service.
His students spend as much time online as they do in the classroom. And Kiropatwa believes the key to success for a generation of students is to improve our attitude towards math.
If they had the same attitude towards math that they do about driving tests, we wouldn't have an education problem.
From Manitoba's news and talk leader, this is Richard Cloutier Reports on CJOB 68, the Superstation.
Darren, good to see you. Happy New Year to you and all those people around the world who are listening to this segment online.
Thanks, Richard.
Now, who's listening to us and where are they right now?
Well, I to be frank, I don't know. I did let people know that I was going to be here this morning, and I sent a little message out on Twitter before I came into the studio this morning. I published a little something on my blog so that people could, wherever they are in the world, coordinate their time. I also let them know that there'd be an open space where they can communicate with each other so that they can chat, and I gave them the link to the CJOB website so they can listen to it streamed live over the internet. So I don't know how many people there are.
Not unlike your classroom.
Yeah, like it's hard to know how many people are kind of taking in what my students are publishing. Although we have a little map on the side, and every time we get a hit, you know, we get another red dot. And as those we get hit from the same spot more often, the dots get bigger, and the map eventually becomes obliterated in red as people from all over the world read what my kids write.
Three other teachers will join us here, and they're on hold right now listening to the conversation. Have you physically met these three others?
Dean, Cheryl, and Wes. No. Well, I've met Dean. Dean and I, where did we meet for the first time? I think we met here in Winnipeg for the first time.
But you know them all online.
But, oh yeah, like we became friends through our online interactions. Cheryl and I have been working for years. Wes and I have been working together for years. We've never met face to face.
This is a good time to do this segment because class resumes on Monday. So we have teachers, we have students, and you are listening right now on CJOB 68 and at CJOB.com. This is a segment not just about mathematics. This is a story about engagement. It's about the future of our province. It's about a roadmap for our children, especially in an uncertain economy.
What I wanted to do today was a workshop class.
I watched Darren in a grade 10 pre-calculus classroom at Daniel Mack, a challenge given many students have English as a second language. You have a smart board in your classroom. What's a smart board?
A smart board is really kind of a giant computer screen that you put on the board in front of you, and then it has digital ink. So you can write directly on the board. You can manipulate things with your hands. You know, your finger becomes the mouse. And I have a wireless keyboard, which I'll put in the hands of a student, a different student every day.
You'll play YouTube clips on the smart board as well.
Yeah, like if I find something relevant, and there's lots of, you know, there's a lot of good stuff on YouTube, and I will try to find something engaging on YouTube, and I'll pull that in, and if it's relevant to what we're learning in class, that could be a prompt to start the day's lesson.
In each class, there is a child that is assigned to do the blog, the summary of the class.
Scribe,
explain that.
Yeah, the scribe, well, I call it the scribe post. And I can give you like a whole lot of research and background on why we do this, but here's the process. Whatever we learn in class that day, one student is responsible to write a summary of what we learned. And the assignment is, summarize what you learned in class today well enough so that someone who wasn't here or was away sick or for any other reason could keep up to date and know what they had missed. And they have to end their scribe post by choosing from the class list the student who will be the next scribe. So my involvement is really kind of creating the space, making that available to them, which is a blog. And then the first class, I ask for a volunteer. And then it's entirely self-sustaining. Like, the kids pass it on. And there's a sense of ownership and accountability that comes to, not to me, but they feel a sense of accountability to each other.
Almost like they're building a Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Type of permanent log of what went on in the classroom.
Well, I describe it as, like, I don't expect my students to read the textbook for the classes I teach, but I do expect them to write the textbook. And this is how they write the textbook. Each student, one day at a time, one page in the book.
This is also about engagement. Within the classroom environment, you have 25, maybe 30 students. And some will be standouts. Some will have their hand raised. They'll always be there to answer the question.
Yeah.
But online, there's a different dynamic going on. Explain that.
Well, you know, it's interesting because often the first objection you hear to stuff like this, using technology and having an online space to engage students, is why don't you just talk to them? Like, you see them there in class. Why not just engage them face-to-face? Now, there's a couple of issues with that. Sometimes the class time is not long enough for them to cover the amount of material that we have to cover. And in high school, we're covering lots of material really quick. But what ends up happening is that online, every voice is amplified equally. So that when a student speaks, they type something on the blog, they make a contribution, and everybody hears that contribution, everybody reads what that student says. Now, if that's a student that normally might sit in the back left corner of the classroom, mind their own business, never raise their hand, never open their mouth, but then when it's their turn to be scribe, and they do something interesting, something innovative, something different from what's been done before, and kid comes in the next day and says, hey, Who's David? How did you do that? That was amazing. And David's never had a conversation with this quote-unquote cool kid before, more outgoing, more energetic. Well, now suddenly they become the center of the class. They get the spotlight shown on them. And what ends up happening is that we have a shift from kids wanting to do well in class to gain marks or grades to wanting to do well for the social credit that they gain.
Wait a minute. You weren't good at math in school.
No.
You didn't like being there. How did we get from the classroom in Montreal to where you're at Daniel McIntyre? Lots to talk about this Friday morning on CJOB 68. Several other guests, including a former student of Darren. If you're online, you can join us live online or the old-fashioned way. Via telephone, 780-6868, pound 680, toll-free on MTS Mobility, 1-800-665-2202.
Call Richard now at 780-6868.
If you promise them running water, windows, indoor plumbing, that wasn't in the treaty.
1-800-665-2202. This is Richard Cloutier Reports on Manitoba's news leader, CJOB 68, the Superstation.
This is a morning where we're going to introduce you to different concepts of learning, the modern classroom, learning in the 21st century. If you're just waking up now, warm up the radio, have a cup of coffee, because we're going to introduce you to some different concepts and how Winnipeg and this teacher is leading a math revolution with others right around the world. Darren Carroll Patois teaches mathematics at Daniel McIntyre. Now, how do you come from Montreal to Daniel Mac? We know that you married into Winnipeg, like so many other people that end up here. You have four young children.
Yeah.
But you couldn't stand high school mathematics. Just before we bring in our three other guests, Dean, Cheryl, and Wes, how do you get from hating mathematics to head of mathematics?
Long, strange trip it's been. In Quebec, we have between high school and university something called Cégep type of college, and I went into... I did social studies, and I developed an interest in mathematics, and my first degree in high school actually was in philosophy. And throughout all this time, I'm working at a summer camp, and the people I'm working with are teachers or social workers, and it was almost a flip of a coin, but I decided to go into education. And in philosophy, I became attracted to the science, the philosophy of science, so I required some knowledge of mathematics. Long story short, one thing led to another, and I took some mathematics courses, and once I finally kind of understood that it was not a bunch of procedures. Like, once that revelation hit me that mathematics is not, you know, finding the right formula from the right menu and rolling the eyes back into your head and trying to access it, that it's actually a coherent collection of connected ideas, and that knowing one big idea might actually enable me to do a whole lot of powerful stuff, well, that became a lot more engaging for me.
We're going to do some math magic in a little while here, later this morning on CJOB 68. And the passion for the technology side of it, how did that evolve?
You know, technology, now, I didn't grow up with the kind of technology that my children are growing up with, that's certain. But basically what happens, what I've found, is that technology allows new affordances, new abilities, we can do things now that we couldn't do before. And so I've always thought that if students had other modalities by which they could integrate what they're learning, and what I've learned since about brain research, that, you know, if you can engage more of the senses, the knowledge actually has a better chance of sticking, that that's something that I really wanted to explore in more depth. So I've always had this interest and passion because, you know, it was the social aspect that really connected for me, because it's not so much about the wires and bolts as it is about the people.
You love the fact that kids have cell phones, the text message. You love that. You embrace it.
Absolutely.
And when you hear about a school principal that's trying to ban this stuff in the classroom,
Unfortunate.
Yeah, it is unfortunate. Let's throw some facts out here. 21st century learner will spend 3.5 hours a week gaming, 16 hours watching television. I think that's on the decline. 5.5 hours on the computer. I think that's on the upswing. Mm. 2 hours reading a book, 5 hours on an iPod. My parents use email, says the student, but students are texting, instant messaging, and blogging.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the alarming numbers. 76% of teachers have never used wikis, blogs, or podcasts. 14% of teachers will allow students to create something each week with technology. 63% never do. 61% of teachers do not use digital storytelling technology.
Mm-hmm.
This is what has to happen in the classroom, because in order to communicate and to connect with kids, this is the technology that they're using all the time.
Yeah, and they're sometimes kids use it in uninformed ways, and that tends to get highlighted in the media. And it's unfortunate. There's a lot of talk about cyberbullying, too, that comes up, you know, in this conversation. And the research doesn't support a lot of what comes out in the media. Most of the kids that are victimized by, or online predators rather, most of the kids that suffer that kind of abuse, it's someone they know. It's not, you know, in my Delicious account, I have articles that I have bookmarked and earmarked. Actually, Dean, who will be on later, actually has this at his fingertips. The kids aren't being abused by someone online. What ends up happening when kids do get involved in that is when they start actually wanting to meet up with someone. And if kids are aware that if you have this conversation with someone you don't know and then they say they want to meet you, then that's crossing a line, then that's something the kids need to learn about. Parents aren't as hip about what kids can do. So, I mean, in my house, our computer's in the living room. And when my son's online, he's only online when we're home, and we're always looking over his shoulder.
Let's talk about this later on and some of the techniques that your kids will use to cover their tracks and some of the techniques you can use to make sure you know what your kids are doing online. Because with all the technology, there are some downsides. But I'll tell you right now, in researching this piece and job shadowing our guest here for a couple of hours and seeing what he does in the classroom, there is more up than downside. Mm. All right. K12OnlineConference.org. We will meet three other teachers in a moment here on CJOB 68.
You're listening to RCR with Richard Kluche.
Fire away, Richard. Bring it. You're a monster.
This is the Superstation, CJOB 68.
How much time will you spend online with Wes Cheryl and Dean?
Well, the four of us put on a conference called K-12 Online. We've got 3 years behind us now, so 2009 will be our fourth year. And as we build up to the conference, like we're kind of on hiatus right now. The conference, quote unquote, ended in November, beginning of November, although it's always online, people can always get it. But starting in March, as we start planning, we'll meet maybe once every couple weeks or once a month, and then it's weekly. And some during the conference almost daily.
We will explore math in our lives and how important is it to the future, to our future, in a moment on CJOB 68, the Superstation. Darren Kiropatwa is with us. He teaches math at Daniel McIntyre Collegiate. He's also involved at K12OnlineConference.org. What is K-12 Online? What is that, the basic concept of it?
K-12 Online is a conference by teachers for teachers interested in leveraging the power of social media and Web 2.0 technologies to modernize classrooms around the world. So we've got people on the cutting edge everywhere contributing their expertise to help anybody learn all the time for free.
Dean Shereski, where are you, Dean?
I'm in my den here in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan.
How long have you been teaching math?
Zero. Well, I shouldn't say that. I was originally an elementary school teacher, so I taught math as just part of general studies for 14 years, and now I work as a technology consultant in our school district.
So there's no math teachers involved in this, and yet Darren is our math teacher here in studio. Cheryl Nussbaum Beach, where are you, Cheryl?
Virginia Beach, Virginia.
Oh, the weather must be nice. You must hear our weather forecast here, and it just at minus 33 right now. But it's not even a dry cold. It's 71% humidity. What's the weather like in Virginia?
When I looked this morning, it was about 62.
Yeah, that's not bad. That's not bad. Cheryl, what's your background?
I also have an early childhood education background. I've done a lot of different things in education. I've been a charter school principal. I've taught at the university level. I'm adjuncted to the College of William and Mary now. And I have worked as a district administrator. So have done a lot of different things. But my classroom experience was as an elementary educator.
Wes Fryer is also with us. Wes, where are you?
I am in my home in Edmond, Oklahoma, just north of Oklahoma City.
And what's your background?
Well, I actually started in elementary education as well, but spent 5 years at the university at Texas Tech working with distance learning and faculty. I have taught undergraduate and graduate courses, and have spent the last several years really focusing on technology integration with K-12 teachers, working a lot with one-to-one laptop initiatives, as well as the K-12 Online Conference, which is focused on professional development and helping teachers connect with each other, because we really are our best resource in the 21st century when it comes to learning and trying to stay up on all these changes.
In my business, it's about engagement, engaging your listeners with passion. You do that in the classroom, but you also do that online. Explain how you do that.
Well, you know, engagement and being enthralled kind of get confused, and enthralling is like enslaving the mind. Engagement is providing a learning task to students that they're finding relevant and motivational at an intrinsic level and possibly at an instrumental level, too, because they see what that's going to do for them. So what engagement means to me, and I think, I can't speak for everybody else, but it means allowing students to be able to interact not only with content but also with each other, to be able to remix content to make it their own. This comes out of constructivist learning theory, which says, you know, learning is not just filling a pail. It's having the students be able to take in ideas but then connect them to their background experience and then be able to represent the things that they know and understand in authentic ways. And we certainly do that with tests, but there are so many other tools and ways in which we can get a window into what students do and what they are capable of doing, as well as what they understand and what they need to know, what their questions are. And so these kinds of tools, I think, really provide a window into the mind of the student and into learning that can be more beneficial from the teacher's perspective, but also from the student and the parent's perspective, because it's about learning. And if we provide these engaged learning tasks, you know, chances are students are going to have more time on task, they're going to interact more with content and each other, and that means they're going to learn more, and they're going to do better on all forms of assessment.
And Cheryl, that has to do with wikis, it has to do with being online, it has to do with text messaging, it has to do with embracing the technology in the 21st century as opposed to rejecting it.
Yeah, I think that we really need to create classrooms that have more windows than they do walls. Where we can, I think the primary role that the 21st century educator is going to find themselves in as we march forward in time is the ability to be able to help students pursue their own passion using these tools, and also helping them to find content experts, subject matter experts from around the world, being able to gain that global perspective rather than just having the isolated opinions of one teacher within the classroom. So it isn't so much about the tools, it's what the tools will allow us to achieve, and helping kids to be able to create their own positive digital footprint. You know, so many people are scared of the technologies, especially educators. They think, you know, well, what if a kid gets kidnapped and taken off to Siberia, you know? And instead, what we need to be concentrating on is helping them understand how to use ethical, safe uses of these technologies, which make it ridiculously easy to connect and collaborate with people who are really going to be able to teach them something and to help them to build their virtual resume. Because, you know, in the future, it's not going to be that paper resume. It's really going to be looking at what you've been able to do, who you've been able to connect with, what you've been able to create, and how you've been able to engage within the participatory culture online that presents itself, because that's what jobs in the future are going to require for kids to be able to connect and collaborate.
Dean, have you met with any resistance by administrators if people have said to you, wait a minute here, this is something we want you to do outside the classroom? Have people said, you know, this is all fine and dandy, but we got to get back to basics here?
Well, yes. There have been some resistance. Surprisingly enough, though, I would say that those people are now in the minority, and I think part of the reason they're in the minority is because the evidence is all around us. Outside of education itself, we're seeing the transformation of our society and the shift that technology is having on society in our everyday life, you know, with the advent of you know, pervasive use of cell phones and information. And I think the piece that really I try to bring across when I do find that resistance is the fact, and Cheryl and Wes have kind of touched on it already, but you know, the idea that information isn't scarce anymore. And so, you know, we need to be looking at, you know, when you say back to the basics, that becomes a very interesting conversation, because what we mean by basics, I think, can change. I agree that we can get back to the basics if by basics we're talking about being effective communicators, if we're talking about people who can teach themselves and learn on their own and do all those kinds of things. If those are the basics, then I agree. But if we're talking about basics by meaning let's memorize facts and, you know, and let's just, you know, get out, you know, paper only and read books and only and not worry about digital things, then I think we're missing, because I think what we're talking about today is a shift of what the basics are, and the basics do include digital technologies as a major part of how all of us interact with our world. And, you know, to that end, you know, for us, you know, for people to make the arguments and they look around, they see all the negatives that, and there are negatives that come with the pervasive use of technology, but they're not going away. And so I think we do a disservice to our students when we ignore the fact that we have to figure out how to live in this world effectively and how to learn in it.
And Cheryl, it's important because it's not just within the school environment. You're also creating lifelong learning.
Yeah, I think it's lifelong learning. I think it's also, I think, that what we need to look at is that it's not just institutionalized learning. You know, what kids are learning 24/7. So they come to us with a great deal of expertise and experience. And so it's part of it is going to really be the reculturation of schools where teachers feel comfortable realizing that through reverse mentorship, they have a lot to learn from kids. And so what I really see happening is in this lifelong learning perspective is creating classrooms that really are learning communities. And whether it be teacher at the front, top-down kind of stuff, it becomes everybody has something to add to the pot, and everybody can learn from each other, and there's just as many conversations taking place from kid to kid, kid to teacher, as there are top down from teacher to kid.
And Wes, that can be intimidating for some teachers, especially when some of the kids in the classroom know as much, if not more, than their teachers. It can be gratifying for some, but can be intimidating for others.
Absolutely. I like to say, you know, we're all pretty much who are teaching now, schooled in the 20th century, and this situation where we feel like some students have more knowledge and maybe even more competence with technology skills in front of the room didn't happen. So one of the biggest things that we as teachers are continuing to work on is recognizing we don't have to know all the point-and-click steps in order to use these tools, and that our students become resources and can become resources for us and for each other, you know, as we're learning with these tools. But it's absolutely a different environment, and it involves a much different classroom atmosphere than, I guess, the one of control. Control is the key word, right? Do you want to control, you know, every action happening in your classroom? Well, if you do, then students are going to stay in those straight rows and are going to be, you know, taking notes and listening, or you're going to hope that they are. But if you're willing to let go of some of that control and open up, you know, these ideas of engagement, it involves more risk, but it actually involves a lot more learning and a lot more excitement on the part of, really, I think, not just the teacher, but certainly the students as well.
This is CJOB 68.
Email your story to rcluche@cjob.com. This is Richard Cluche Reports on the Superstation CJOB 68.
This is 21st Century Learning on CJOB 68. If you're at home listening or in your car saying, what's going on? What's Cluche talking about? This is what is happening in some classrooms in Manitoba and should be happening in more of our classrooms. Later, we'll tie all this in with not only the future of education, but the future of our economy. We'll get back to mathematics after the news at 10 o'clock. We have a bit of a quiz. It's magic with Darren. We'll also meet one of Darren's former students who continues the learning process. And we'll talk about mentoring as we continue this Friday morning, the 2nd of January, on CJOB 68. School is in on CJOB 68, and I didn't think it would be this much fun. Cheryl, Wes, and Dean are with us on CJOB 68, along with Darren. Darren, take the classroom here for a few minutes.
Yeah, I got to, listening to Cheryl, Dean, and Wes talk, it's, when you were asking about back to basics, let me preface my comments about basics with this. You know, if we look at the way schools are currently structured, it goes back to an Industrial Revolution sort of model, factory sort of model of education. The Industrial Revolution brought about assembly lines, and we needed to produce a workforce that could work in factories, etc. And if you look at the way our classrooms are organized today, the lines and rows, it very much harks back to what that was about. Now, if we want to go back to basics, let's look at what learning and education was like before the Industrial Revolution. Well, if you go back to, I don't know, like 400 BC maybe, then what you're going to see is that learning is an intensely social activity. It's not regarded as something that's associated with work. It's regarded as something that's associated with play and enjoyable and fun. John Seely Brown talks about the atelier model of education, of learning, you know, where people are working together collaboratively to create some artifact, and then the master will come in and do a critique of someone's work with the goal of helping everyone share in the critique, participate in it, and see what model, what good work looks like. And then everybody kind of takes that back with them. Again, going back to 400 BC, you've got apprenticeship. You've got mentorship. You've got people working side by side, hand in hand, and it's not always just the master to the apprentice. Apprentices get together, people talk, there's conversations, and learning is a conversation.
Gary joins us on MTS Mobility on CJOB 68. Go ahead, Gary.
Hi, this is a really neat topic. So I'm not sure if I got this right, but what they're saying is when the teacher is teaching a class and giving a lesson, they encourage the kids to be sending text messages. Well, later on in life, when the boss is telling them what to do, are they not listening? They're busy sending text messages. And if so, how are these kids ever going to find time to sweep my floor?
I think you misheard what some of our educators are saying here. And let's myth bust right now. Go ahead, Darren.
Yeah, no one's saying anything like that. No one's saying that we want students to be text messaging while they're in class so that they're having conversations that are off topic and extraneous to what's going on in the classroom. However, I could use the cell phone in my classroom because my smart board's wired up to the internet using various sites. I can have the students text a reply to a question so that if they're shy or afraid to contribute to the conversation, they text their reply. It's anonymous, and I get feedback from everybody instantly.
Very much like what we do online with our CJOB question of the day. You're anonymous. We give you a choice here, but you can actually use a free site where you go and the kids can text their answers to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the great equalizer, but it also tunes into the technology that they're using, their means of communication.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's not, we're not talking about putting technology in kids' hands and let them use it in any old way that they wish to use. There is some direction and there is some guidance provided by teachers, but it's not... But that guidance actually leverages the new affordances that are made possible by having a cell phone. You know, if you ask a kid, I'll give you an example. I was in Boston this past summer, and we were on a boat in the harbor, and we went by a fort. And someone said, "Gee, I wonder what is that fort?" Now we're all on a boat; we're not on land. And someone doesn't know what that fort is, so he pulls out his iPhone and he looks it up and tells me the entire history of the fort right then and there. So if you teaching pure factual recall, that's a waste of time. People have got cell phones, the cell phone's going to revolutionize our society. It already has. It's going to be more so, I think, by the end of 2009.
This is about Wesley, Dean, and Cheryl, about teaching our kids how to think critically, isn't it? It's not just regurgitating facts. This is about Dean teaching kids how to think.
Absolutely, and the caller does raise those kind of questions, and I appreciate that because it's certainly something that comes up, is what happens when, right? I mean, I think we need to understand that the technologies themselves are disruptive, and the word disruptive and the idea of disruptive technologies doesn't necessarily have to be a negative thing, and as Darren has pointed out, there's tremendous power in utilizing these when they're utilized effectively. And part of that's the real challenge for teachers, is to say, okay, when we open up this, and Wes talked about the idea of control, when we open up these technologies to our classrooms, it brings in the world of possibilities, but it also brings in a world of challenges, as the caller mentions. What happens when? I guess what we're trying to avoid is the natural tendency for the unknown to say, well, you know what, I don't understand how this all works, so the easiest way to manage this is just to say, keep them out of the room. And that's an interesting, and cell phone and mobile technology might be the most, hottest issue of the day, I think, in classrooms. One of the things that I face is, how do we deal with this? And while there aren't any, there's no book that says, here's exactly how you manage this. Actually, I shouldn't say that. There is a book that just came out by Liz Kolb on using cell phones in the classroom. But, you know, it's a challenge. How do we effectively use these tools? How do we avoid the bad parts of using them? But again, by simply making a straight call that says, let's eliminate them from the classrooms, we do our students a huge, huge disservice. And they do have to understand how to use their cell phone as they move into the business world and all those kinds of things. And that's where the role of the teacher really comes important, not how to use the technology and tools, because as Darren mentioned, our kids know how to use them. There's a whole ethical piece here that teachers and parents and everyone really has to get on board and help us work through and understand how that's going to play out.
21st Century Education on CJOB 68. Darren, you're not teaching that student in our last caller, Gary, you're not teaching that student how to sweep floors anyway, are you?
No, that's the thing. That student doesn't need me to learn how to sweep the floors, and he'd be quite right. He shouldn't be texting if that's his job. But what I am trying to teach kids to do is to work in a knowledge-based economy where they're going to have to work in a networked environment, perhaps with teams where they're not physically face-to-face necessarily with their colleagues.
We'll continue the conversation after the 10 o'clock news. We also, you're also bringing some magic to the table here?
Sure, we'll do a little math magic.
Little math magic, and you want some participation?
Yeah, from the audience, yeah. We'll do a little mind reading, yeah.
You're going to do some mind reading?
Oh, yeah, I'll read all their minds.
More coming up on CJOB 68. How do you do that? thanks so very much. 21st Century Learning on CJOB 68. Darren Kirapatwa is here on the Superstation. He is the head of math at Daniel McIntyre Collegiate. I need a few callers here to participate in a math experiment. Actually, some questions here, not too hard, but you're going to be able to read their minds, read our callers' minds?
Yeah. So we'll just ask people if they could call in and just give a one-digit number.
Okay. 780-6868. #680 is toll-free in MTS Mobility, 1-800-665-2202. Need your help here for... He's going to play some Kreskin here. This is called Magic Math. So I need some independents calling in on this. 780-6868, #680. I need three or four volunteers at 780-6868. All right, we have Steve here with us on CJOB 68. We have Amanda and we have Nicole. Steve, you're with us?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, and you got a piece of paper?
Nope, but I can probably...
You got to get a piece of paper here. Nope. Amanda, do you have a piece of paper?
Yes, I do.
And you have
got one here.
Okay, do you have a pencil as well?
I do.
Okay, Nicole, you got a pencil as well?
A pencil. I'm just grabbing a piece of paper.
Okay, and does anybody... Do we need calculators for this?
They may like to have one.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, all right.
Don't got one.
Okay, so we'll give you some time here for this answer. Okay, okay, Darren, you take it away, Darren. CJOB is your classroom. Go ahead,
okay.
Darren.
Steve, why don't you just give me a one-digit number?
Okay, 7.
7, okay. And then we've got, is it Amanda next?
Yeah.
Amanda, give me a one-digit number.
4,
thanks. And our last caller, Nicole, have you got a one-digit number for me, Nicole?
5.
Excellent, thank you very much. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you to add up those numbers, and then I'm going to ask you to do something else with it. While you're doing that, I'm writing something on a slip of paper, folding it and sliding it over to Richard.
Am I allowed to look at it?
No, we'll just keep that for a little while.
Okay, so I will put it underneath my computer keyboard, but you did write something on a piece of paper and slid it over to me.
Add up all those numbers, I get 16. And what I'd like you to do is something else with those numbers.
Okay.
Take the three numbers we've got, and you want to make as many different two-digit numbers that you can. So, for example, we have 7, 4, and 5. So you can make 74, 75. You can flip them around and get 47...
54.
50, yeah.
That's it.
So we're going to make it, you're going to end up with 6 different numbers when you're done.
Okay.
How are we doing, Steve?
Doing well here.
Okay.
And then you just want to add all 6 numbers together when you're finished.
Okay.
So that's the part where you may want to use a calculator.
You know what we can do?
Yeah.
We can break and then come back with, and we can continue this.
Sure.
We'll
so add up those numbers and get your calculator handy, because there's one last calculation and Richard's got my slip of paper on the far side of the table.
Okay, so we'll give you a couple moments here. We'll break, we'll do traffic, and we'll come back with your answers in a moment on CJOB 68. Math is fun. Math teacher Darren is with us. Dean, Cheryl, and Wes will rejoin us in a moment. We have our three volunteers. We thank them very much, Steve, Amanda, and Nicole. And they gave us the numbers 7, 4, and 5. And Darren has asked them to create the combinations, the two-digit numbers with those. It's 6 combinations, and you add them all together. And Amanda, what's the answer when you add all 6 together?
352.
352, is that what everybody has?
Yep.
Okay, now divide your answer by... When we added the three numbers together, we got 16. So divide your answer by 16.
Okay.
And before you say what you've got, well, actually, why don't you say what you've got, and then, Richard, you can check that slip of paper you've got.
22.
Steve?
22.
And now I'm opening 22.
Oh, wow.
22. How did you do that?
Well, that's the next question, isn't it? And in a classroom... That's what I would ask the students. So how did I do that? Why does that work?
Okay.
And are these three numbers special, or does it work with any three numbers?
All right.
Maybe we'll let that hang for a little while. Let people mull it over.
You're pretty good at this. So you'll start this early in the class, and then you'll try to get people thinking about it, and you'll come back to it later, because that's the hook, right?
That's
part of engagement.
That's right. And what I want to get out of it is not the answer to this particular puzzle, but is there something that we can use all the time in all similar puzzles? Get to a big idea.
Okay, well, can we ask Steve, Amanda, or Nicole if they have the answer?
Sure.
Do you know why?
is it the three numbers add to 16 and it makes six numbers out of it, add six, and that's 22?
Well, that's true, but are these three numbers special?
Mm-hmm.
7, 4, and 5?
Yeah, like what if you all had given me three different numbers? Would this work with any set of three numbers, or is there something? And how did I know the answer was going to be 22 just from your three numbers? And you know what? I'll even give you a hint. I waited until the three of you gave your three numbers before writing down what I thought the answer would be and sliding it over to Richard.
What do you mean? You thought. You knew the answer.
Yeah, I know. To be fair, I knew the answer. Yeah, I knew the answer.
If you wrote it confidently.
I knew last night that you would all get 22 today. So the question, of course, is how did I know that? What is it about the process? Pick any three numbers, make as many two-digit numbers as you can from that. So I know there's going to be six of them. Add them up, and then divide that by the sum of the original three-digit numbers.
Hmm.
Is there a pattern there? Because when I teach mathematics, as my students have heard me say thousands of times, is the science of patterns. I've got a student across the table now nodding his head. And so the idea behind mathematics is identifying patterns. Because if you understand the patterns behind what you're learning, then within a single pattern, you may know a whole multitude of particular facts. And it's not the particular facts that are interesting. It's the patterns.
Okay, Steve, Amanda, and Nicole, thank you so very much for helping us out with this interactive experiment this morning. Thank you so very much.
You're welcome.
You're welcome, Richard.
And have a great day and a happy new year to all of you here on CJOB 68. Now, we'll just to kind of hook the audience, we'll give them the answer at about just after the 10:30 break.
Sounds good.
Now, why is this important? Why are we doing this experiment? I know it's engagement, but why is this, and why knowing these patterns, can it lead to, again, part of what we're trying to accomplish here is telling people how you teach our children how to think.
Mm.
So square that circle if you can for
us. Well, it's really about being numerate. And it's about understanding the relationships between numbers and understanding, like in the media, we have facts and figures thrown at us all over the place. I know, like in a workshop that I've done before on numeracy, our governments talk about spending millions of dollars or billions of dollars, and your average person will go million, billion, you know, big numbers, like beyond that. But do you know what a million is? Like, do you know how big that is? Do you know how big a billion is? Do you know what the difference is? And in my classroom, I ask students, I say, okay, let's play a game. Let's pretend I'm going to give you a dollar every second. Off the top of your head, how long is it going to take us to get to a million? Are we talking minutes, hours, days, months, years? Like, you know, and let your listeners right now, just in your own head, you don't have to, you know, say an answer, but maybe jot down, what's your answer? Is it days, months, years, and how many? Give me
a dollar every second.
Yeah, and I've got to be honest with you. Personally,
that's $60 every minute.
Yeah. Personally, I don't understand numbers much bigger than 100. Like, I have no, it's difficult to develop a concept of what something looks like if it's bigger than 100. Because I can get 100 pennies in my hand, and I kind of have a sense of that.
Mm-hmm.
So when you answer my question, don't give me an answer of 1,000 this, or I want whatever unit you're going to use, hours, days, months, years, whatever it is, to be a number smaller than 100. So I can have some kind of understanding or appreciation of it.
So what's the answer?
Well, if you actually do it, right, a million, if you divide it by 60, because there's 60 seconds in a minute, then you have the number of seconds, right? And you divide it by 60 again, you're going to get the number of hours.
Come on, Math Whiz, what's the answer?
It's just over about 11.54. It's just under 12 days.
That's a lot of time.
Well, if you sat here without going to the bathroom nonstop, a dollar every second, take us almost, we'll be into the 12th day before we hit a million. Now, that's not the point. Here's the follow-up question. What if we did the exact same experiment, but we're going to go to a billion? And without doing any figuring just off the top of your head, so you know $1 million is going to be about 12 days, how long will it take us to get to a billion? How many days, weeks, months, years, whatever you think it is, and a number smaller than 100.
Okay, let's bring in your former student here, Mark Rabina. What's the answer to that?
I can't remember, but it's big, because a billion is another zero or another three set of zeros from a... a million.
So it wouldn't be 12 days.
No.
No.
It would be how many days?
Well, we're not talking days anymore.
We're talking years.
Yeah, we are. Most of my students haven't lived this many years, a billion seconds. None of them have, actually. It's 32 years, approximately.
32 years.
32 years. That's the difference between a million and a billion. So when you throw up your hands and you say, what's the difference between a million and a billion? Well, hold on. There's a big difference.
Well, suddenly, it makes sense, doesn't it? Suddenly,
yeah.
You can kind of, you know, it suddenly makes sense to you, and you conceptualize that a lot better than you would just, you know, looking at the zeros on a piece of paper.
Right. And if we go back to the activity that we did, you know, when I was doing the mind reading, it's not the activity per se that's important. What's important is if anybody's trying to figure out at home, well, how did he come up with 22? Will that always work? Well, you know, are these numbers special? The thinking that they're doing and trying to answer that question, that's the juice. That's the kind of thinking that we want to get at. Can they analyze and evaluate the
procedure? So if you can solve that problem in the business environment of the 21st century, if you can critically think that problem, you should be able to handle anything that your boss throws at you.
Right. It's not the answer to the particular question. It's being able to think, in math we say, algorithmically. Do you understand the algorithm? An algorithm is a set of steps and a procedure.
And here's one of the problems we have as a nation, and this goes back to the introduction just after the 9 o'clock news. If you can't read, we suddenly take notice. If you're not good in math, we laugh it off, say, you know, you're not good
That's
in math.
That's right.
But you're saying, wait a minute here, there's different cultures, the Asian, East European culture, that look at math as being key to the future.
Mm.
And we need to look at math as the key to the future.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Canada's participated in studies that have looked into this. And they've looked at, you know, people, numeracy and literacy, right? And people who are good at both obviously do the best, and people who are bad at both obviously do the worst. But it's the middle ground that's interesting. What if you have stronger literacy than numeracy skills? Or maybe you're better with numbers than you are with words. Well, how do those people rate? Are they both equally in the middle? What the research says is that the people who have stronger numeracy than literacy skills tend to be much closer to the top of the scale than people who have stronger literacy over numeracy. So you may not necessarily be able to be a whiz in everything, but if you wanted to emphasize something, I mean, it looks like in terms of, and the study looked at the economic ramifications of those skills, we need to do some more focusing on numeracy to bring all of our kids up to a higher level of ability.
Do you think we are? Do you think we take it seriously enough as a Canadian society?
Well, there's a couple of things there. One, I think a lot of teachers all over the province are doing their damnedest. You know, like I made comments earlier about the Industrial Revolution, and I know that in most classes you're going to see lots of desks moved around, teachers trying different things every day, and that happens on a regular basis. I think the problem that we've got, as far as this relates, is more cultural. And I gave the example to you before. Like, you know, if you went to a dinner party and said to someone, you know, can you read this article in the paper? It's interesting today. If they throw their hands up in the air and say, I'm functionally illiterate, well, no one would do that. They'd be horribly embarrassed. But to say that they're enumerate, like, can you figure out why this little exercise we did, why does it work, and let's have a conversation about it. Well, some people are immediately turned off, even shut down. Like, that's math. I'm not going to touch that. You know,
but they laugh about it. They almost say it as a sense of pride. You know, I'm not that good in math. You know, my mother wasn't, you know, I just come from a family that's not good at math.
That's right. And I think there's a real problem with that.
But you're saying it's no laughing matter.
No, it's no laughing matter. Those attitudes get passed on to kids. And it's not, the kids are learning, is an intensely social activity, and kids learn from the company that they keep. So if you value education, if you value being numerate, then your children will.
But that's where East European and Asian cultures are kicking our butts, because they come from cultures that relish and that encourage, almost to the point of, to the nth degree of being numerate.
Well, you know, I have anecdotal evidence from people that I've met from East European countries and Asian countries, and their attitude about mathematics education is, of course you're going to do well. Of course you're going to do whatever you need to do to be successful. Whereas sometimes in Canada I've experienced something very different where, well, if you're not good at math, I mean, that's okay. I wasn't either. I mean, I kind of feel that parents should maybe have the opposite attitude. You know what? That's not something that I learned well. It's really important that you take this a step farther and grow a little further than I did, if that's the case.
Because if we're a lot better in math, we're going to be a lot better in the global economy?
Well, you know, everything that we operate now has mathematics behind it. The radio that you're listening to, the calculator that you may have used, the cell phone in your pocket, the computer that you used, you know, underlying all of that is mathematics and a series of patterns. So it's really important. Like, our economy is evolving towards what's called a knowledge-based economy, and having an understanding and appreciation of the patterns of mathematics is going to make people more able to put to compete.
21st Century Learning on the Superstation. Darren Kiropatwa is with us on CJOB 68. Let's bring back our three other educators here who join us online and by telephone. Wes Fryer is with us from Edmond, Oklahoma. Wes, how long have you been teaching out there?
Well, I've been in the Midwest teaching since 96. I started in Texas and then moved up here to Oklahoma about 3 years ago.
Cheryl Nussbaum Beach is in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Cheryl, what taught you, what turned you on to teaching?
Well, that's an interesting question because I'm not the typical person who gets turned on to teaching. I actually started out kind of with a lot of an animosity towards education because the way that I came up through the system, I definitely was invisible, fell through the cracks, and a lot of things that should have happened didn't happen in my educational experience. And so I actually got interested in teaching by homeschooling my own children. And while I was homeschooling them, people often said to me, "What makes you think you're qualified to homeschool your children? You're going to ruin them," you know. And I got tired of hearing it, and I certainly didn't want to be guilty of it. So I decided to go and go through my teacher preparation courses so that I could become a licensed teacher, so that the next time somebody said that to me, I could just hold my diploma up in their face and say, this is what gives me, let me know. And instead what happened is I fell madly and passionately in love with education and everything about it and decided to give my life to making classrooms different than what I experienced as a kid.
Dean Sharesky is with us from Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. Dean, if you weren't a teacher, what do you think you'd be doing?
Well, it's interesting. I was thinking about this the other day, and I actually started to go into journalism, which I didn't. But what's interesting now is that all four of us that you're talking to all have an online presence where we blog fairly regularly. So I've been able to sort of foster my love of writing and journalism by doing it in sort of a DUI kind of model. So, you know, just being able to communicate those ideas online is pretty exciting.
And let's talk about K12onlineconference.org in just a second, but we have to let the audience in, and we have to tell the answers to the quiz here and why our magician here was able to come up with 22. Earlier, we asked our three participants, Steve, Amanda, and Nicole, to come up with some numbers, and once they came up with those three single-digit numbers, you worked a little bit of magic, but you slid the answer to me well ahead of 22.
Oh, yeah.
So explain the solution here. Why 22?
Well, it'll help, particularly for our three folks that helped us out, if you have those numbers written down. So if you wrote the numbers down, all the two-digit numbers, you'd write 45, 47, 54, 57, 74, 75. Now, if you look down the list, now, so you have that list, and you recall I asked you to add the three numbers, 7, 4, and 5, to get 16. Well, if you add in the ones digit, you'll see 7, 4, and 5, 7, 4, and 5 twice. So that means you have two 16s in the ones digit. And then in the tens digit, you have two 4s, two 5s, two 7s. Again, you've got 7, 4, and 5 added together twice. So you have twice 16 in the tens digit. So that's how you ended up with 220, because it was 10 times. And then I had you divide by 16. What you were finding was how many 16s were buried in that sum. Now, again, the particular, so you end up with 2 in the 1's place, or 22, 2 in the 1's, and 2 in the 10's place, 20.
So could there be a magic solution of 333 then?
Well, you pick three different one-digit
sure.
numbers. You're going to get a different sum. So it looks like magic because every time you come up with different numbers. But every time you add them, you're going to get 220. And every time you divide, you're going to get 22. Now, it's the division part. Like, they didn't have to actually have them do the division by 16. We could have said, I could have written 220 there and just had them add it up.
Ah.
But it's having the division piece in there. That's the hint when people are exploring, well, what did we do and what's happening here that may lead them to look at how those numbers were added? And again, it's not this particular solution that's interesting, nor is this particular problem interesting, but it's the thinking done to get here.
So in your classroom, there would be a scribe that would be assigned to blog about it.
Right.
And they would basically take you through that magic and take you through the solution. And then online, you're hoping to have students talk further about applying what you learned there to other scenarios.
Yes.
That's the ideal.
That's the idea, yeah. That should then be transferred. And I emphasize that I want them not to think so much about procedures as I want them to think about concepts, to identify patterns.
Wes Fryer in Edmond, Oklahoma, is that what's going on in your classroom and in your school and other schools in Oklahoma as well?
Well, what we're hearing Darren talk about needs to be happening in all of our classrooms. But the reality is, you know, we have a lot of traditional learning happening. The wonderful thing is we're now able to connect as educators to each other. And as someone in our back channel online discussion said, there's a lot more people in the room today than ever before. So we definitely have, you know, really innovative examples. I mean, out in Howe, Oklahoma, which is in southeast Oklahoma, you know, the high school students in journalism there are broadcasting live, you know, their announcements and their sports every single week. And we've got innovative things that are happening, but it's in pockets. The wonderful thing is we're not isolated. And that's really what one of the big things K-12 Online is about, is providing a forum for educators to get together and teach each other and connect students together as well.
So, Cheryl, it's not just for students. This is more for teachers and sharing ideas and what works, what doesn't work in the classroom, and different methods to reach kids who sometimes need, and I'll go back to that word, engagement.
Yeah, I think that the whole philosophy behind K-12 Online is that it provides a community atmosphere for teachers. So often, as educators, we're overwhelmed. We have so much to do in the course of a day that it's tough to even get in a bathroom break, much less be able to actually go and visit other teachers' classrooms, look at what they're doing, have conversations. I can remember when I was in the classroom that I knew who the good teachers were in my school simply by their reputation. But as far as knowing what they did or how they were successful or what it was they did that motivated students that would help me grow in my craft as an educator, it wasn't there. And so through K-12 Online, this is an opportunity for teachers to come together and actually share some of those areas of expertise that allow them to be able to grow from each other's experiences that just the way that schools are organized doesn't allow.
You know, it's funny, listening to everyone talk, Cheryl, Dean, and Wes, every year we've run this conference, we try to kind of push the envelope a little bit, do something a little more innovative. Well, there's a website called dotsub.com. And what that does is a lot of our content was video content, so we mirrored it at this website. And what that allows people to do is to take the video and then create a transcription text. Now, they can transcribe it into English, but they can also translate it into any language in the world. Now, if anybody spends maybe a couple of minutes transcribing a minute, say, of video, and everybody adds their 2 cents, then what we may end up with is the whole video transcribed and translated into languages all over the world. Now, okay, so what? We've increased accessibility for teachers. Well, that's good, but we want this to spill over to kids. So the suggestion that I made during the conference was that not only would that be a good idea, but that second language teachers around the world, no matter where you are, our content is free. It's archived online through the College of William and Mary. So, you know, proxies and you know, blocks are not likely to happen because that's an educational link. And they could have their second language learners translate and transcribe the content. Now, the content is professional development content for teachers. So my suggestion was, well, get your second language learners. And often in schools, the second language learners are often regarded as the kids that are less able, less competent, right? Well, and that's not universally true, but in some cases, I mean, they have so much on their plate trying to deal with new languages, etc. But now put these kids in the spotlight, because they transcribed those workshops. They're 20 minutes long each, and then invite them to the staff meeting, where not only because they've learned the content while they were translating it and let them present to the staff in 5 minutes an innovative idea that they were exposed to. And this kind of turns teaching and learning on its head. It empowers students to become teachers, and you don't need to tell teachers, like anybody who's ever taught anything, you don't learn anything so deeply as when you have to teach it, and we need to pass it on to our kids by orchestrating meaningful, engaging activities where they become the teacher.
And when they're learning it and they're teaching it to others, including their own family members.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, share the wealth. I mean, with K-12 Online, we want that content repurposed. We want it distributed to the broadest audience possible. And can you imagine kids teaching teachers? Like, those kids walk into that staff meeting. They're on stage for 5 minutes. They do the presentation. Teachers walk away with maybe a clever idea that they might be able to use in their classes the following day. But what's the impression that happens on those kids? What's the impact on those students? And what will that do to their self-esteem and their sense of competence?
So how many hits are you getting on this site? How many teachers are involved in this? Who's all coming to this now?
Well, in the last 3 years, we've had it was well over a quarter million, over a third of a million hits at this point, I'm sure, by now. And we get hits from literally across the planet. There's not a continent on the planet except perhaps Antarctica.
And you started this just here in Winnipeg?
Well, me and Cheryl and Wes in the first year, and we were also helped by Lonnie Ritter Hall is another educator. She was convener last year. She stepped down this year, and Dean stepped up. But Cheryl, Wes, and I have been there since the beginning. And every year, we're just kind of trying to push the envelope. Like, what's new? What's different? How can we find other ways to engage teachers to engage students?
This is RCR.
Keep up with What's Up on Richard Cloutier Reports.
Shut the lights up. Join the club.
Call #680 on MTS Mobility or 780-6868 on CJOB 68.
Lots to learn this morning on CJOB 68, 21st Century Learning. After the news at 11 o'clock, we'll also talk about literacy, numeracy as part of literacy, and we'll engage you in some questions at 780-6868, #680, toll-free on MTS Mobility. What are wikis? What is Twitter? More in a moment. This is CJOB 68 with Cheryl in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Wes is in Edmond, Oklahoma. Dean is in Moose Jaw, and Darren is with us here on CJOB 68. After the news at the top of the hour, we'll talk to Mark Rabina, former student, and we have some questions for you. Email at cjob.com. How do students compare against other classes of standardized testing? I know that comparisons are usually frowned upon. After teaching math for 35 years, I've seen many trends and innovative ideas come and go. I'm not against technology, but most learning is hard work and can't always be fun. What evidence is there that you're turning out a superior product? Is the taxpayer getting a good return for the money?
Well, there's a lot packed into that question. The first thing is kind of the last comment about most learning is hard work and can't be fun. Well, I would say that learning is an intensely social activity. And to the degree that you can amplify the social interaction related to learning the particular content, that leads to engagement, and that does add an element of enjoyment to it. So not fun in the sense of just playing around, but fun in the sense of engaging. That's something we can get at. To get to the particular point that she's asking about, what evidence do we have that, you know, students, let's say in my classroom, are taking away more perhaps than they would if I wasn't using these techniques and these technologies in my teaching? Well, we've got one here, so we can ask him directly. But what I'm finding is the students tell me, and I guess, you know, I should probably, maybe I need to do some kind of more research on this with the students, but what the students are saying is that when they write their scribe posts, their summary of what they learned that day, and they end up in the class, in the exam, and that question comes up on the exam, they're like, I know this cold, and they zip through it.
You don't test until they're ready. You're not.
Oh, no, yeah.
You don't test until they're ready for it.
I'm setting them up for success, not for failure. So because the test date is scheduled for this day, if the class isn't ready, then we move the test date. Now, sometimes that means we've got to work a little harder to get through later material, but we do that. We work together.
Cheryl, you've done some research in this area. Tell us about it.
In the area of
getting bang for your buck, and you're also in Virginia, probably an area where there's more standardized testing.
There was a.
There's a lot of standardized testing here. The research that I've done doesn't exactly have to do with standardized testing and how that plays out. Most of the research that I've done is more in the area of looking at teacher performance and teacher knowledge construction and how that happens. But I will tell this story that when I was at teaching in the classroom, one of the things that I did was working with kids to make sure that they had technological proficiency. I used reverse mentorship and took teachers who were most reluctant in learning some of the new technological concepts or true seamless integration into their classroom. And I had teachers, instead of trying to motivate them myself because they were very reluctant, I used kids because that was their X factor. That's what they were motivated with. Well, the kids that I chose to help teach them some of these concepts were kids who traditionally struggled with standardized testing. You know, in Virginia, our state standards, our standards of learning, it's very important that kids do well on those. And these were kids that traditionally had never had experienced any success. They had failed both traditional core content SOLs and technology SOLs, which the state had at the time. And so what I did is I took kids who had traditionally not done well at all, kind of working along the theme that Darren said, that you don't know something as well until you teach it. The teachers were motivated because they thought, oh, look, I'm helping Johnny and build his self-esteem, and he's going to be so much better once he has higher levels of self-efficacy, where the kids were like, wow, I actually have something of value to add, and so they wanted to do it right. What the end result was is these kids ended up doing that year when they took their SOLs, many of them passed their SOLs in their core content area, which had not happened before, and they did advance in the technology SOLs. And I think what it was, from anecdotal evidence, looking at what I've looked at, is that these kids truly, when you build self-efficacy, when kids start to believe in who they are and their capability and that they truly have something to offer, instead of feeling like failures all the time, it spills over into every area. And they tried harder in their core content areas, and it made more sense to them because they were able to learn it in a way that they were passionate about.
Wes,
tying the passion and tying the motivation is the secret to really getting kids to do well.
Wes and Dean can continue to join us after the 11 o'clock news, but Cheryl, you have to leave us. So a very specific question for you. Is this our biggest challenge as far as education is concerned? And link that challenge to the future economy, especially in a North America, a worldwide economy that's in a downturn right now.
Yeah, the biggest challenge in education, especially tied to the economy, is going to be a reculturation of schools as we know them. But, you know, in business, the way that a business stays alive and exists and continues to do well is they continually reinvent themselves. And schools traditionally have not reinvented themselves in the last 100 years. It was interesting. There's a commercial on TV, and I'm trying real hard to remember what it is, but I know in the commercial they're showing high school, and the flipping back and forth between high schools, showing high schools hundreds of years ago, and high schools now, and it's during a football game, and I can't remember what the product was they're selling, but the point was is they couldn't have done that comparison in that commercial if schools had continued to reinvent themselves and change. You wouldn't be able to say, you know, look at the comparison, we've been doing this for hundreds of years, you know. And so I think that the real challenge that we're going to deal with is that teachers are going to need to reinvent themselves in the 21st century. Schools are going to need to get together and talk to their teachers, and everyone's going to need to decide what are the principled changes, not crazy wild out on the cutting edge that we don't know if it doesn't work, but what are the principal changes that we need to make in education to guarantee that we remain relevant in the lives of the 21st century?
Give me one as we leave us. Give me one, Cheryl, that one change that we need to make.
I would say that one change that we need to make is that we need to get away from the traditional model that says the teacher is at the head of the classroom and that they come in with this set amount of knowledge, they crack the kid's head open, they pour the knowledge in, and then the kid regurgitates the facts back. That with the way that knowledge is doubling, the way that content is expanding, you know, some people that predict these kinds of things say that by the year 2020, Ken Kay with the Partnership for 21st Century Skills says that by the year 2020, knowledge will be doubling every 72 hours. If that's the truth, let's be skeptical. Let's say half of all knowledge will double every 72 hours. Well, if that's the truth, if there's anything to that, there's no way that we could memorize it if we wanted to. And so we have got to get away from content being king. Yes, there's a core amount of foundational knowledge we need to have, but instead we really need to start thinking about how can I help kids be able to connect with people who are the knowledge matter experts in the area that they're passionate about or in the area that they're learning in my class.
This is CJOB 68. What are wikis?
A wiki is a website. People have probably heard of Wikipedia. It's a website where anybody can come, click a button that says edit this page, and add content to it.
We're on Twitter.
Twitter is the stupidest idea you've ever heard of, and it's absolutely brilliant. Twitter is basically, it's a presence tool. You answer the question, what are you doing, in 140 characters or less, and that just kind of goes out to your network, people that are subscribed to your Twitter account.
21st Century Learning on CJOB 68, more with Darren and our other guests, and the Literacy Connection. That follows CJOB News at 11 o'clock. You can join us online at CJOB.com. Live conversation at 780-6868. This is RCR. Darren and Mark are with us. Also with us, Dean and Wes. It's 21st Century Learning on CJOB 68. Dean Kurapatwa teaches mathematics at Daniel McIntyre Collegiate. How long have you been department head there?
I forget. I think I've been department head since about 2000. Maybe it was 2001. No, it was 2001.
What do you mean you forget? You're the teacher here. You're the math whiz here.
You know, some things are important to remember and some aren't.
We'll also talk about the brain literacy and why this is so important. We'll take your calls at 780-6868, #680, toll-free on MTS Mobility, 1-800-665-2202. Later in the hour, some online tricks you need to know because your kids are way ahead of you. The modern classroom, and it's not just the physical environment of bricks and mortar at the classroom. We are learning more and more. It's online. With us on CJOB 68, Wes Fryer. He is in Edmond, Oklahoma. Dean Shoresky is in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. They are part of K12OnlineConference.org. Check out that website. Also with us here in studio, Dean Kurapatwa, who teaches mathematics at Daniel Mac Collegiate, and former student now, Mark Rabina. Darren, the whole philosophy is you're teaching in the classroom. What's in the classroom is also extended online. There's tools here. There's also mentoring. Talk a little bit about mentoring, and then we'll bring Mark in.
Well, I try to think of it as a classroom without walls, or perhaps a classroom with glass walls. And one of the ways that I've done that is I've invited mentors, other educators from around the world that participate or interact with my students online by leaving them comments on the work that they do. So we talked about the scribe posts, but they also, every student before every unit tests, usually a few days before, publishes a personal muddiest point in their learning, a little reflection on where they're at. I mean, so much comes out of that. Kids, there's a lot of warmth generated between the kids as they see everyone struggling with the same stuff, a lot of warmth between them and I. But the mentors come in, and they leave comments on that kind of work that encourages the kids to explore ideas in greater depth. I had actually two classes of student teachers. Professor Alec Kouros at the University of Regina, he had two classes of student teachers that mentored my consumer math class. And they were, you know, the interaction between them was really helpful for my kids.
So ultimately, when your kids are online at home, that some of the windows that are open would be one of your windows at school, that they're doing their homework, they might be communicating with others, because yeah. So let's face it, they've got 2, 3, sometimes 5 windows. They're having multi-platform chats.
Sure.
That one of those chats has to do with school and math homework. That's one of the ultimate goals at a young age, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know what? I almost feel like I want to throw it over to Mark here, because maybe Mark should tell you what his homepage was when he was taking math with me, and then some of the mentoring that he got involved in.
Well, let's bring it over to Mark Rabino. Mark, your first year university now?
Yep.
How long did you have Darren as a teacher?
3 years.
3 years. Okay, so tell us about your webpage, your homepage, and that whole process and how the learning continues.
Well, our homepage is apcalculus.blogspot.com. Well, my mentoring page, I can't remember. It's on my blogger.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been quite a while since I've touched upon it.
But when you were in class, Mark, do you remember you told me that your Firefox was set, the homepage in Firefox, was that the class blog, or was I thinking something
else? It was the class blog before, but now it's different. It's on my university class blog now.
So how did that process, and I think you just kind of touched on it before the 11 o'clock news, but you're going back and using it as a reference even in university, are you not?
Oh, yeah, I'm using it as a reference, especially in my calculus class. I look upon the past examples and then take a pattern from it, then apply it to whatever problems that I'm facing or whatever problems that I have in university now. Like, for example, there was a topic in related rates, and I saw a question about how the distance from the pitcher is decreasing as the runner is approaching him. It's kind of like a right triangle question that I saw from my midterm exam.
So you're able to go back to that online, and then you figure that out, and it helps. By the way, what did you get in the course as a grade?
I can't remember.
Now, at university?
Oh, I got an A on calculus.
So, but I gather having that blog spot, having that reference online, going back to high school, helped you get that A.
Well, going back to the blogspot.com, I can see more examples.
Okay. So the learning continues, in other words. And that's ultimately what you want to accomplish, right?
Yeah. Mark doesn't do himself justice. He, for example, he and another student, a boy by the name of Ben, they spontaneously started, you know, interacting online. We did a little podcast about it. I interviewed them, and it got published on my blog, adifference.blogspot.com, and they ended up becoming mentors for the entire class. I mean, I don't know if, Mark, if you want to talk about that. How did that happen? Do you remember how that happened?
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Ben?
It was just a casual conversation on MSN. It started like that. And at first, he was just sending me questions from the booklet. And then I tried to answer it with as much detail as I can. Then I'm going to throw back another question at him. Then he's going to answer it. And it's kind of like a back-and-forth conversation, and it just grew from that, and it became like an online tutoring for both of us.
How is that empowering for you? Because sometimes in the classroom, we talk about the social pecking order of the classroom, the hierarchy of the classroom, that there's the popular kids versus the not-so-popular kids. But online, suddenly, there's an equalizer there at times, is there not?
Oh, online, everyone is equal. Everyone have their voice. There's no cool guys. There's no, like, shy people. Everyone is equal.
And, Dean, that's important, isn't it? That's important to learn, and for kids, especially with children who have self-esteem issues, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And of course, the counter-argument to that is the fact that people say, well, technology is making our kids more isolated. They're opting out of face-to-face interactions, and really, there's actually a lot of research that would disprove that highly. In fact, our kids are just highly social, and this is just it's not to the exclusion of the face-to-face. And as Darren and the students will attest to, I mean, there's high levels of social interactions face-to-face. I teach a distance course at the University of Regina as well, and we talk about that a lot, but. The idea that technology can provide some equalization, can provide a voice for people, and it's a different way of communication, not the only way, but it is another powerful way that when we include this as part of our classrooms, we do provide an amazing opportunity for students they never had before.
Because here's how we get to education, classroom to economy. Wes, the jobs of the future will have somebody like Mark Rabina in our studio here, working with somebody in China online, who's working with somebody in Berlin online, working with somebody in San Francisco online. It's the 24-hour workday. They're collaborating online. And while you may not meet face-to-face, you are working together online. That's the global economy. Is it not, Wes?
Well, absolutely, but it's not just the world of the future. That's the world of today. You know, I spent 2 years working for AT&T as their education advocate here in the Midwest in Oklahoma, and I worked on a distributed team initially of 8 folks that were in 5 different U.S. states. you know, in the two-year period, I met my boss face-to-face twice, you know, once for golf, and I think the day that I joined the company. All of our work happened with electronic tools. Of course, we used the phone, but we used instant messaging. We used wikis. We used Google Documents. We used these tools to connect and collaborate and to get work done, to meet deadlines, to create deliverables, you know. And this isn't something that's just happening in the far distant future. It's happening today. So helping our students and helping our teachers develop comfort and fluency with these kind of tools, it has really important workforce.
So if this is the workplace of today, our education, our institutions have to be there. They have to be there now.
Well, they do, and you know, that's where I think it gets overwhelming when we think about institutional change and cultural change. And you know, what we've heard Darren talk about is real practical ways that classroom teachers are making those changes today. You know, the blog post summary, that is something that can happen in every classroom. You know, asking students to get involved in teaching their peers and teaching others. I mean, Darren's class there in Manitoba literally has been teaching calculus now for several years to the world. That is incredible. And, I mean, I'd be interested to hear them talk a little bit about, I don't know what that's been like, because that is not the experience of most students today.
Yeah, the fact that, Mark, you're helping teach calculus around the world. Do you realize that?
At first, I don't. But now, thinking that a lot of people are reading our blog posts, it's kind of like we have to do a better job to teach other people and to teach our classmates.
Interesting. Because Darren somehow... Now Mark realizes I've got a responsibility here.
Oh yeah, and the kids feel that sense. Like sometimes a kid is ascribed for a particular night, and if they're late getting it up, or if they something happens, they don't get it up. When they finally do write their scribe post, it usually begins with, "Sorry guys, this is a little bit late." There's that sense that, you know, I need to apologize because I dropped the ball. When we once this was an interesting experience. We had a young boy in grade 5. In Georgia, his teacher and his class, they were blogging, and I guess his teacher mentioned something about my class. He finds his way to my professional blog at A Difference, and then from there finds his way into my class blogs, one of my pre-cal blogs, a grade 12 class, and starts leaving comments for the students. Well, the students trace the path back to him in Georgia, and this conversation goes back and forth. So this young boy, Eddie, is so totally juiced about what's happening and his conversation with these senior math students in Winnipeg. My grade 12 kids are entirely impressed with this young grade 5 student from Georgia, and they can't believe that he's reading what they're writing. What ended up happening was we exchanged a podcast. They did a podcast down in Georgia, Eddie with his teacher. Our class did a reply up in Winnipeg, and then using Skype, we brought Eddie and my class together, not exactly face-to-face, but virtually, and we had a live conversation. And the kids were just so impressed with young Eddie. Now, let's look at what's happening. Because what I say is, like, learning is an intensely social activity, right? And when people care about what you're doing, then it wants you to do better work. You want to do better work. So someone cared about what little Eddie was doing in Georgia, and Eddie was so motivated to do better work, but not for marks. And my students in grade 12 pre-cal, knowing that a grade 5 kid in Georgia is paying attention to them and is trying to learn from them, and they engaged them. There was a whole mentorship piece that happened there that we probably don't have time to get into in very much depth, but you know, my students started mentoring Eddie. And my guys were so juiced knowing that their stuff is being read by even kids in grade 5, never mind, you know, the calculus in the university, and we still get comments. Like every now and again, we'll get a comment on SlideShare or on the class blogs from students that want extra help. But my guys were juiced, and they wanted to do better work, also not for marks. See, kids are all about social connections. Kids are all about wanting to look good in front of their peers and getting props from each other. How do you get props? You do something cool. Well, if as teachers, if we can get them to do cool stuff, create content that educates, that impresses their peers, and then they want to outdo that. And I see this on the blogs all the time. The first scribe post may be very short, maybe a short paragraph. The next student comes in and adds a little color. The next student has an image. The next student's pulling in something off a website, a bubble share slideshow, and then the next thing I know, it turns into a multimedia extravaganza. Well, that's not the assignment. The assignment is summarize what you learned today well enough so that someone who is away can learn from you. And they start wanting to outdo each other, not for marks. They start wanting to outdo each other for the social credit that accrues from doing cool stuff. And I've got them doing that about math, which I'm quite chuffed about. I mean, my students do. I even had some of my weak students. I remember one girl who actually, unfortunately, in the end, she withdrew from the course. She dropped the course. But she wrote a scribe post that went on and on with hand-drawn images that she had uploaded. And then I got an email from a colleague in Scotland. Well, he was doing a teacher professional development and wanted to talk about this process of scribe posts. And this post that he wanted to use as a model was this young lady's. Well, when I saw her in the hall, I said, hey, you know, your scribe post is being used for teacher training in Scotland. And you should have seen the look on her face. She wanted to come back to class.
What did you just say? Chubs?
Chuffed.
Chuffed.
Chuffed. Proud.
I'm chuffed that you're here. This is RCR.
Call Richard now at 780-6868.
They don't stick their nose where it doesn't belong. They don't get into trouble.
1-800-665-2202. This is Richard Cloutier Reports on Manitoba's news leader. CJOB 68, the superstation.
The classroom of the future is now, and it's here at Daniel McIntyre. And there are other classrooms like this across Manitoba, across Canada, and into the United States. We're talking 21st century learning. I'd like you to join the conversation at 780-6868. Are you as turned on by this conversation as I am? I don't see a lot of down in this. I see a lot of up. When kids are motivated for the sake of learning, not for marks, but for props, for social acceptance, and we're talking mathematics here and other subjects, then we're achieving something, aren't we? My lines are open at 780-6868. #680 toll free and MTS mobility. Email at cjob.com. We'll give you a bunch of websites, some blog spots to go to as well. The conversation continues in a moment. We're talking 21st century education on CJOB 68. Wes Fryer is with us. He is in Edmond, Oklahoma. Dean Shoresky is in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. Darren Kurapatwa teaches mathematics at Daniel McIntyre Collegiate. All three are involved in K12onlineconference.org. Check out that website. We've got some other websites and blog spots for you to check out. And if you can, get a piece of paper and a pen, or if you're at your computer, we'll tell you how to reach these individuals through their online teaching. And this is Andy on CJOB 68. Thank you for joining us, Andy. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Richard. I just wanted to commend you and CJOB for having the insight to air this program this morning. I've been taking part in the back channel conversation on the internet for the last couple hours, and it's amazing. There's about 35, 40 people from all around the world that are paying attention to what you're saying. I've been a big fan of Darren and his work, his professional work, and the work he does with students for the last several years, and I just love the fact that you're actually broadcasting this to the greater radio audience in Winnipeg, and I'd love to hear what other people in Winnipeg think of this.
Well, and I think that's where it has to go, is that it has to go mass audience, and the timing of this is fortuitous in the sense that it is a holiday break, so you've got teachers at home, you've got students and parents at home, they're not at work, some of them are in their cars, but it's a different listening pattern right now. And I thought this would be, and we'd start the conversation today so that when you're at parent-teacher interviews, people would say, hey, I heard Darren and the others on CJOB, what are you doing in the classroom? Because I think this is the beginning, and what you're saying, Andy, here, this is about a conversation that we have to have, because learning is lifelong, and it's not just in the classroom. But also what I'm getting from this conversation is that teachers have to be engaged. We have to be engaged. We have to, I'll put someone like Darren on a pedestal today and give him the opportunity to tell people about his views on this thing, because he's passionate about what he does. And if we don't have passion in the classroom, just like I have, and you're listening to me because I'm passionate about this subject, because this is about our kids and about the future and about building a Manitoba economy. And it starts at a very young age. And that person who's at the front of the classroom, who has eyes on, and if that person isn't motivated to turn on my kids and your kids and other kids to learning, then we're in trouble. But we need more Darrens, we need more Wesses, we need more Deans, and frankly, Andy, we need more people like you who are participating in this. So yeah, I am too very interested to see the reaction to this type of program. Because it's not hot button. It's me playing teacher a little bit today, telling people what's going on in the classroom. But that's what I do. Richard Kluche reports this is what's going on in some classrooms. Andy, I think it has to go on in more classrooms.
Agreed.
780-6868, #680, toll-free on MTS Mobility, 1-800-665-2202. Wes, one of the other passions that I have is that we can put a laptop computer into the hands of somebody in Africa, but we can't get enough laptops into people's hands here in Canada. If I had my way, more kids would have access to laptop computers. I just wanted to know what the three of you think about that whole concept, about getting laptops into kids' hands, because there's still a bit of a digital divide here. You can get the computer and access to computers at school, but not necessarily at home. Go ahead, Wes.
You know, this is a huge issue, and netbooks, we're seeing now that the $300, $250 laptops being available, I think are going to be one of the most important and exciting things people will be talking about in 2009 with respect to education. But what's critical is that we don't simply, you know, replace the pencil with a digital pencil, that we're looking at what we're doing and the ways in which we're allowing and inviting students to create content and to be able to share their learning and have insight into what they know. And this is about assessment. I mean, that's what K-12 Online really focuses on, is how can these tools be utilized to improve assessment. So, you know, I'm with you. Here in Oklahoma, you know, we only have 5 districts out of over 500 school districts. And most of our districts are very rural, very small. We're talking, you know, less than 300 or 200 students. Only 5 have laptop initiatives. And of those, only 1 that I'm aware of let the kids take the laptop home. That's in Crescent, Oklahoma, just northwest of us here in Oklahoma City. So, getting tools into the hands of kids is important, and that's a torch for us to carry. But what are we going to do with those tools? And what K-12 Online is focused on are those innovative teachers who are helping students, you mentioned the engagement word, you know, engage and connect and collaborate. Frankly speaking, most of the Web 2.0 tools are blocked in a lot of our Oklahoma schools. I was in Shanghai, China in 2007 and did a little test. Behind the Great Firewall of China, more websites like wikis and blogs and social networking tools were blocked here in Oklahoma in one of our large school districts than they were even in communist China. So we have a long way to go, but man, it's exciting to see the availability of these tools, and it's really exciting, as we heard the last caller say, for you to amplify these thoughts within mainstream media, because really it's just a small number of teachers and students right now, in my perception, that are in this conversation, and we've got to take it mainstream.
Darren, Dean, and Wesley, and this is Shane on CJOB 68 along with Mark. Go ahead, Shane.
Hi, I just wanted to weigh in on the issue here. I think it's a great idea to have the technology in the classrooms. The two things that I was sort of thinking about while you guys were talking were, you know, throughout history, as technology has become available to people, it's been intended for certain uses, but it always seems to be young people who co-opt the technology and direct it to their own uses. And I think we've seen it in a small way with text messaging. So it'll be interesting to see how these kids sort of develop these tools and then redirect them into ways that they're probably, we haven't thought of yet, and they're going to be far more useful to them. And about the laptop issue, I know that you can sort of buy a laptop online. It'll get shipped to a child in a third world or a poor country. What I've been reading about it is that Intel and other companies are not interested in having North American and European people have access to these computers, because it sort of chops their bottom line. You can get a decent laptop for $200 in Africa, but right now, I mean, they'd like to still sell you the same machine for $500.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, guys.
So true. Thank you very much, Shane. Weigh on the laptop and what Shane said, Darren.
Yeah, and you know, every year with K-12 Online, we've got a different theme. And this last year, the theme was amplifying possibilities. And, you know, teachers everywhere, most teachers have a lot of passion for what they're doing, or they wouldn't go into this, because no one goes into teaching for the money. So there's got to be another reason. And one of the things that we try to do with K-12 Online is you want to try something different, and teachers are doing different things all the time. But what's possible? Like, what are the caller was saying, you know, the kids are finding new ways to use
text messaging, and let's see if we can use it positive as opposed to negative.
How can we repurpose it? Yeah. How can we repurpose it so that it becomes a pedagogical tool rather than a playful tool or solely a social tool? How can we piggyback on the social connections kids are making to engage them in learning? And that's what we try to do also with K-12 Online, is we try to model for teachers everywhere. You haven't thought about using text messaging in class or the cell phone? Let me illustrate to you a number of possibilities. Dean mentioned Liz Kolb earlier. Can't recommend her highly enough. She did a brilliant session on last year's K-12 Online 2007 on the cell phone, using the cell phone in classrooms. I mean, her session, you can listen to it 100 times and there's still more to get out of it.
This is Carl on CJOB 68 on MTS Mobility. Go ahead, Carl.
Just on the laptop issue, I know because my nephew's in Europe, Portugal has a program where they actually provide laptop computers, and they're called the Magellan, which is, they got together, I think, with Microsoft and provided these to students.
And I think we should get Dewar tuned up on this and get a government who's talking about, because you know what, Carl? They're talking about infrastructure projects, right? The whole idea of let's build some more edifices out here. Why not infrastructure invest in today's youth through laptops, through technology, through teachers? That, to me, is a better reflection of the word infrastructure. Sorry to interrupt, Carl. Go ahead.
Yeah, but I mean, what's our biggest infrastructure if not our youth? Isn't our youth going to be what's going to drive the future? I know that the government, and they create the computers, they gave them at a low cost to the students, they have the technology, and they will use it. And as the other caller said, they will use it the way they feel it. They will probably start using text messaging and all of that.
But when you've got people like our guests here guiding them to do it the right way, and you've got mentors, then suddenly you're using all this technology to something very, very positive. Maine does this as well, do they not?
Oh, yeah, there's lots of examples we can point to. And this is what I mean. Like, some people say, well, what would I do if I had a laptop in my classroom? Like, so what? Throw all that money at me, or some people would say throw it away. Well, in the state of Maine, statewide, they have a one-to-one laptop initiative. Kids in middle school get a laptop, and that's their laptop until graduation. And now, a lot of people say, well, you can't do that because the kids, you know, they're going to hack it, or there's going to be all kinds of tech problems. How are we going to manage it? Well, the fact of the matter is there are fewer tech problems because the kids take ownership of it.
This is the textbook, though.
Yeah,
do you use the textbook?
Well, no, I don't use a textbook.
You use booklets, and you use
textbooks to pull questions.
But you're online.
Yeah. And see, like I was saying earlier, like, it's not, I do not expect my students to read the textbook. I expect them to write the textbook one student at a time, one day at a time, one page at a time.
This is RCR.
You're listening to RCR with Richard Kluge. This is the Superstation, CJOB 68.
We'll give you some important website addresses as well so the conversation can continue after the show here on CJOB 68. This is CJOB 68, the Superstation. Richard Kluge reporting. Wes Fryer is with us from Edmond, Oklahoma. And Wes, I'm being told here that I'm supposed to tell you to say hi to everybody at the staff at the Coffee Creek Golf Course.
Okay.
Are you familiar with that?
We've got a lot of golf courses.
Okay.
Down here.
All right. Well, that's we're obviously reaching somebody that's played golf there. Dean Shoresky is with us from Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, and this is Greg on CJOB 68. Go ahead, Greg.
Hey, gentlemen. Two things. One, a personal experience. I went to a computer camp way back in 1980, and access to that computer was something that I grew from tremendously as a youngster. I begged my parents for a computer probably monthly for years and years, and I bet you it was 10 years before I finally got my own computer. And I think that access to that technology at a younger age for myself may have made a huge difference in my life. And secondly, I don't know if it was discussed, I'm getting in a little bit late on this, but in the book Outliers, were you discussing Bill Gates at all and how his access to a computer far before most universities in the United States had computers, obviously had a tremendous effect on the way he turned out and what he was able to do in his life based on his access to this technology.
It's a great point that you make, Greg, and I thank you for making it. Darren Karapatwa is with us. He teaches mathematics at Daniel McIntyre Collegiate. And Mark Rabina is here. He's a first-year university student, former student of Daniel. Do you remember your first computer? How old were you when you first got access to a computer?
Maybe I was 5 years old.
5 years old. See, and for most of us, that's the age now, 4 and 5. And
daughter's 2.
And she gets access at age 2.
Yeah.
But again, you have all the rules and regulations in place, et cetera.
Well, it's social. Like, we keep it in the family room, and everybody kind of sees what everybody's up to. Like, my 8-year-old daughter, Amelia, she uses a website called Tutpup. And that's where she's kind of working on her spelling and her math, and she competes with students from around the world. And they kind of have a little race, who can get the most questions right. Well, I've seen her, just over this holiday, improve in reading and mathematics fantastically, and she shares her successes with my wife and I live as it's happening.
Dean, what's the next step in this process? Because as we approach 12 o'clock here and wrap up, I want to get some where-do-we-go-from-here type of comments, because... obviously, you're building something online, you're building something in the classroom, and hopefully you can build some momentum from this in traditional mass media here through CJOB. What are some of the next steps here?
Well, it's interesting, going back to the conversations you're having about purchasing laptops for students in one-to-one, and while I agree that that's a lofty goal, and Maine is a great example of someone who of a place that did this several years ago, I'm thinking a little differently on this now as someone who... leads a district in that, and while I agree there's still a digital divide and not all students, more and more of our students own devices, and we need to be thinking differently in terms of a computer being a laptop or a desktop. It is a cell phone. It is all kinds of devices. If you look at the iPhone now, I mean, it's a computer. It's a powerful computer. And so I think what we ought to do, sort of our first steps here, is recognize that that our students have these tools with them already, not all of them, and we need to support those that certainly can't afford that. But let's begin by allowing some of our students who already have these devices to bring them to school for learning tools. And so we don't have to even spend a bunch of money. Our district right now is spending a lot of money on wireless technology, making sure our schools have provided students access and figure out ways that they can bring their own computers that are personal to them, that they've customized, that they can use, and use them for learning. So that would be a first step. And then another one I just wanted to comment on, you know, as Darren talks about his class and Scribe and the idea of them teaching beyond their own classroom, the analogy I think that really hits home for me is the fact that we've done a great job in schools of providing stages for athletes. We promote athletics and we promote drama and music and have stages for them. And now with technology, we have the opportunity to provide an academic stage where students can showcase what they've learned. And as Darren alluded to and Mark, that they've been able to showcase that to others and then engage in the social learning idea with anyone from around the world. And so that's where leveraging the technology for audience and for social interaction is really powerful. So those, I think, are two areas we need to really spend some time thinking about.
This is Freeman on CJOB 68. Go ahead, please.
Hi, my name is Freeman. I'm a marker at the University of Winnipeg. And the attendanceship of the students is just atrocious. It's like a grade 3-4 level. And I'm wondering whether it's because of frequent and abundant computer use.
Why does penmanship matter?
Well, when I'm marking, like, I can hardly read what the students are writing.
Understood.
Yeah, and I think it matters because doesn't penmanship still matter in today's society, or... Has that been thrown out the window?
Who wants to handle that one? Wes, does penmanship matter? Because I would suggest at some point you're going to be doing those tests online.
Well, here's an example. When did we stop focusing on Morse code, you know, in let's say, the military training? You know, at some point we recognized, hey, the telegraph is not the predominant way of getting messages across, so everyone doesn't need to memorize Morse code.
But here I think this is, again... where some of our education, some of our institutions have to catch up with the technology. What's going on out there, correct?
Well, you're right. I mean, one of the good points on this is, and Alan Kay says this, the predominant technology defines the predominant learning tasks. And this brings us right to the laptop discussion, right? If the paper and the pencil are the predominant technology in the classroom, then that is going to be the predominant task. But what we're seeing with technologies out in the workforce and in some classrooms where the students are provided with access to these tools is that learning tasks can change, you know, in fundamental ways when the tools change. So if we're in a paper and pencil dominated classroom, I think the importance of penmanship is probably, it appears to be pretty high. But if you're out in the workforce, you know, seeing how communication and how learning is taking place, it is less important today than ever. I am certainly not going to say we need to throw it out, but we sure don't need to focus on especially cursive handwriting and, you know, let's focus on the communication and the writing, and let's let students do that with a variety of different tools, particularly the tools they're going to be using after they finish school.
Gentlemen, I just have a couple of minutes left, and I want to get out a couple of email or a couple of websites here. The first one, Darren, is apcalc07.blogspot.com,
apcalc07.
Okay, apcalc, okay, apcalc07.blogspot.com. What's there?
Well, that's the class blog that Mark participated in creating. That blog is currently dormant, but everything that class created, I thought that might be of interest to your learners because they can see the contributions that Mark has made.
Your blog is adifference.blogspot.com.
That's my professional blog. I kind of think of it as my laboratory or my personal thinking out loud space. It's also a place where when I'm trying to work through ideas or applications about things that I want to try in my classroom, I'll kind of test it out there, get feedback from other educators from around the world, kick the tires, so to speak, and before I'll implement it in the classroom. It's also, if I'm ever involved in any presentation, I just broadcast through there that's what's going on.
www.chatterous.com/CJOB. What's there?
Yeah, Chatterous is what's going on there is if anyone who goes to my blog now will see the most recent post is about this interview. And I created an online chat space so that your listeners, if they wish, can participate with various people in my network, teachers from around the world, and have an ongoing discussion. So that's a live chat. It's happening right now. People have been contributing to it for the last 3 hours. And if any of your listeners want to engage in further conversation or discussion about any of the issues we've been talking about, that's live, available now.
Wes Fryer, thank you so very much for joining us from Edmond, Oklahoma. And Dean Shoresky in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, thank you for what you're doing out there.
Hey, thank you. And just a reminder to Google, right? If you need to find Darren, Google him. You need to find Dean, you know, do the same. And these links are out there, and these connections are possible for us to make. And we appreciate you. Thank you.
And Mark, thank you for spending your day here with us. I appreciate that very much. And Darren, we'll talk to you online. Thanks so very much.
Okay. Cheers. Thanks for having me.
This is CJOB 68.